On Friday, November 8th, one of the largest typhoons ever to hit land struck the Philippines. With winds up to 235 miles per hour, Super Typhoon Haiyan grew into a massive storm that destroyed entire regions. Its most devastating aspect was a storm surge with waves of up to 16 feet, which leveled entire cities. Several thousand people died, although the official death toll remains uncertain. The damage is estimated at $13.5 billion. But after the natural disaster, an aid disaster began. For several days, the world, and especially the government in Manila, was unable to help many of the storm's survivors. Entire regions were cut off. Relief workers were unable to reach those regions. The survivors had nothing to eat or to drink, and there were no medical personnel to care for the injured. This is Steve Sokol. I'm sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. And joining me in the studio is Luke Hinkson, the president of the Brothers Brother Foundation. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad to be here.
Since it was founded over 50 years ago, Brothers Brother has provided over $3.5 billion in medical supplies, textbooks, food, seeds, and other humanitarian supplies to people around the world in over 140 countries. It has also stepped in where there is a natural disaster to help people in need. Since Hurricane Haiyan hit the Philippines, BBF has collected over $170,000 from more than 1,000 donors in gifts and pledges. This includes $9,000 from Philippine-American groups here in the Pittsburgh area. Luke, let's start by talking about how long BBF has been active in the Philippines.
From the beginning of our organization in 1958, our first medical team went to the Philippines.
So very early on.
Very early on, the first month.
And how did you get involved with this disaster now?
Well, we've continued our work in the Philippines. We have an education program with the Rotary Clubs in the Philippines where we provided books and other educational materials to over 40,000 schools. We've also, for the past 30 years, been involved with various Philippine-American medical societies. That would be groups of Philippine-American physicians who are now working here, living here in the United States, wanting to help their country of origin. So we've worked with different groups for the past 30 or so years to send ocean-going containers. Those are big boxes about the size of tractor trailers of requested medical equipment and supplies. Over time, we provided assistance to about 40 different hospitals.
And how does that work? Where do you get the materials from? How do you deliver them to where they're needed the most?
Well, the materials come from either companies that manufacture supplies or that manufacture or distribute medicines. They come from hospitals and clinics. The doctors can retire or have newer pieces of equipment that they want to donate. We get them, organize them, make them available. In the case of the Philippines, in case of our work in Pittsburgh, we work with the Philippine American Medical Society of Southwestern Pennsylvania. It's a wonderful organization, about 60, 70 physicians. They organize volunteer medical teams each year to the Philippines. They invite other doctors from around the country. So they'll have as many as 60, 70 people go at a time in their volunteer missions. They identify a hospital each time. We have been providing the equipment and supplies for the hospital in common effort. So our last one was a shipment to Rojas City on Panay Island, which is one of the ones that was directly in the path of the typhoon. And in fact, the hospital was badly damaged, as was the town itself.
So you already had some experience dealing with exactly the region that was hit by this typhoon.
There were 60 people, medically trained people from the Pittsburgh area, working as volunteers in Rojas City less than a year ago. Now back in Pittsburgh, full of the feelings of the people there, full of the knowledge of the people there, wanting to do more work, and they're working with us.
And you you said that that Brothers Brother has been active in the Philippines since Brothers Brother was basically founded. I'd assume that you've also been working with the Filipino community here in southwestern Pennsylvania as well.
Yes. Our first real work with them began about 20 years ago. One of our board members, Jose Romano, who was from the Philippines, introduced us to the community in a very positive way, and we've just been together ever since.
So if people wanted to support the work that you're doing, how would they go about doing that?
If they were to write a check, we can get material. What we need is the money to move the material, or if we can't get the material donated to us, quite frankly, to buy something. It might be concrete, might be building materials of some type. The check should be made to Brothers Brother Foundation. Our address is 1200 Galveston Avenue. It's Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15233. The website for Brothers Brother is brothersbrother.org. The organization is Brothers Brother Foundation. If a check is sent, there should be a note somewhere on the check. It's for the people of the Philippines.
And, of course, this kind of disaster relief, disaster assistance is nothing new for Brothers Brother. Most recently, I know that you were very involved in providing support after the earthquake and tsunami hit Japan, for example.
Yes, yes. We've been involved with responding to natural disasters from the Pittsburgh area since 1970. Our first work with Pittsburghers was to help survivors of an earthquake in Chimbote, Peru.
Can you talk again a little bit more about just some of the challenges inherent with responding to a natural disaster? I mean, obviously, we don't know where they're going to hit or when they're going to hit. Some of the important work that you do is to deliver these kinds of resources to areas that don't have them to begin with, but that problem is compounded when there's a natural disaster like this.
Yes, it is. When a disaster this size develops, at first no one knows the magnitude of it. There's no report. The power lines are down. Communications are down. No one knows how big, and you have to worry about how big it is, and if you are going to be involved from literally halfway around the world, how do you do it? In the case of the Philippines, is something coming from Japan? Is something coming from Australia? Is something coming from China? Therefore, those things aren't needed from the outside. So there's some coordination there. You also have to have the confidence of the recipients. If you imagine a society crushed by something like this, all the houses blown away, hospitals destroyed, schools down, livelihoods lost. If you come in from the outside and they don't know you, there's a suspicion. You know, they may think you can deliver when you can't, or they may think you can't deliver because you're just from someplace else. And the way you communicate is in either in English or another language, it's just different. So it's very important for us to have a relationship that's immediate, direct, and where there's confidence. And in the case of the Philippine American Medical Society of Southwestern Pennsylvania that had been to Rojas City less than a year ago with their medical team of 60, we have that confidence with the health professionals in the area.
So one big area, that, of course, that we've been talking about has been how you've delivered material and healthcare support. But another big component of Brothers Brother is the educational support that you provide as well. Can you talk a little bit about how that functions? I know that you send lots of books abroad, but it's more than that in
yes.
many ways.
Yes, we get donations of books primarily from U.S. publishers. These are the overstocks. The books are, say, 2 or 3 years old, and a new edition's coming out. Over time, we have sent almost 100 million new books to people who need them in other countries. Most have been in English, some in Spanish. In the case of the Philippines, we provided 16 million books. They teach in English there, as well as other languages, but they do teach in English. And mm-hmm. so there is a use for American books in English.
And do you get requests for certain books, or do you have books that are available and say, these are what we're sending you? How do you coordinate the need with the, I guess, the supply and the demand? How is that connected?
Well, the books are American, of course. We're given a list of books. It could be 2,000 titles at a time. We have recipients in the Philippines that have worked with us for 20 years, educators and others. Because there are so many Philippine Americans living in the U.S., it's about 3 million, there's a lot of connection between our educational system and that of the Philippines. There's an understanding. So as we make offers available, people in the Philippines, educators will say, these are the types of books we can use. These are the types of books we can't use. For example, if we were offered a book on how to drive in the state of Montana, it wouldn't mean a lot to them. But a book in calculus or a reading book of some type might be just wonderful, or some sort of book on natural science. So we do negotiate. We work largely through the Rotary Clubs in the Philippines, and then they in turn, as these books come in only on a request basis into their central warehouse, they in turn renegotiate the books in bundles to individual schools and libraries around the country.
How many books do you send in a given year? How much do you deliver in terms of medical supplies in a given year? Let's talk a little bit about the reach that this small nonprofit here in Pittsburgh has.
Well, we can talk in numbers. We send as many as 300 ocean-going containers a year.
300.
For those who are interested in recycling, it's about maybe 3 to 5 million pounds of material a year that's recycled. It's surplus material that's useful for somebody else.
And to how many countries?
Oh, it's about 30, 40 countries a year with the ocean-going containers. And then we have in the case of doctors going abroad, we support about 300 mission trips. These are medical teams going for short-term medical purposes, and maybe they get to another 30 or 40 more. On the medical side, we provide maybe 100 to 130 ocean-going containers of requested medical items a year. Again, we put them together in bundles. Someone has to ask for the stuff, or it can be consumables. Consumables can be exam gloves. Consumables can be gauze bandages, things that you use once and then you can't use it anymore. We have many recipients in poor countries where they just need more of the same thing each and every month.
And how big is your team here? How big are the resources that you have?
Well, we have a staff of about 15. We have a board of well over 20, mostly from the Pittsburgh area, various backgrounds. Number of physicians, people in accounting, people in education, people in healthcare, other types of administration, legal expertise that give us some guidance and protection. Then we do work. Our great strength is the people who trust us on the other side, the people who are the recipients. It's their networks, and their networks represent, in the case of the Caribbean, almost 3,000 clinics and hospitals. So that means that we have to have a lot of people who trust us and what we do, want to work with us in order to get the assistance to those who are really poor.
Well, Luke, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Luke Hinkson from the Brothers Brother Foundation. There's a link to the Brothers Brother Foundation on WESA.fm. Coming up on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA, we'll be talking with the French filmmakers whose documentary on Braddock is screening as part of the Three Rivers Film Festival. This is Steve Sokol sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer.